Joe Tate, and I have a podcast that takes a look back at my sports broadcast career. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Welcome to another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast with Joe Tate, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental in Seville. Joe Tate joining me, Andy Bulbarch. Joe, great to have you on as always, and we're going to have some fun today, my friend. We're going to go back a long ways here to the days where you put a demo tape together back in 1968. What do you remember about 1968, Joe?
Well, that was my third year at Ohio University, and I had just about had it with higher education broadcasting. Fortunately, the athletic director and the school's president had come to my rescue and moved all of the sportscasting down to the athletic department. And it's a long, convoluted story, and it was time to move. And in fact, at that particular point, the upheavals of 68 on college campuses were going loud and clear. In fact, the day I drove out of Monmouth, or out of Athens, Ohio, to go back to my next job, which was in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, the National Guard were rolling into Athens with truckloads of soldiers because the bookstore had been looted and somebody had set a fire to the president's home on the front porch. And so I was escaping and was ready, willing, and more than able to get back into real broadcasting.
Holy smokes. Okay, well, I didn't realize that your stop in Normal, Bloomington was the next stop after Athens. And Normal, Bloomington's a lovely area, too. As a matter of fact, I've called many of baseball games at the place they call the Corn Crib, where the Normal Corn Belters play. So
that's right.
That is a lovely area for sure. And, well, Joe, we mentioned the year was 1968, and you put a demo tape together. What are the really fun things about going back and looking at some of your old tapes here during the Over the Timeline broadcast is, I mean, really the complexity. You've done so many different events and sports throughout your broadcast career. We've covered things from college wrestling meets to bicycle races to boxing matches and you name it. And on this particular demo tape that you put together in 1968, there were basketball play-by-play, there was football play-by-play, hockey, soccer, there's a walk-off home run, a soccer goal as well. So, Joe, it sounds like you kind of got your feet wet in just about every sport you could think of in college.
I tried to do as much as I possibly could in terms of play-by-play for a variety of sports. Also, I had at one point 29 students who were in my sports casting venue, and I tried to give them as many opportunities as possible to broadcast all different kinds of sporting events. We even did swimming meets on the radio. Now, but it was good because it made the kids think about how am I going to impart the action over the radio, and it was all part of the learning experience. And we had a number of guys go out of Ohio University and go on to bigger and better things in broadcasting. John Caporanis, who has been in the Youngstown area for many, many years, he was my student sports director. I had Al Albert, one of the famed Albert brothers. He was on my staff down there, and a variety of guys that maybe didn't go quite that far up the ladder, but certainly had good careers in broadcasting and had the opportunity to get their feet wet at the Ohio University level.
Now, in today's day and age, putting a demo tape together, many would tell you, is a much simpler process than it was when you did it back in the late 60s. So if you could kind of walk us through the process of putting this demo tape together and how tough that was, not only to put that together, but then to also distribute it.
Well, you needed two things for openers. You needed Scotch tape and a razor blade, because that's how you splice things together and eliminated things you wanted taken out. It was a laborious thing to go through these tapes and, you know, stop and try to hit just what you wanted. You didn't want to cut too much, but then again, you didn't want to leave stuff that you didn't want on there. So it took time, but you could always come up with tape. I mean, that's I guess the statute of limitations is over, but I certainly plundered the tape vault at Ohio University for audition tape to send out when I was looking for another job.
Well, hopefully you got that tape out of the library before somebody got in there and set fire to it before
That's
you made
true.
Your exodus. Yeah. And today, again, it's a much, much different process. I mean, today it is, I would say, a heck of a lot easier, not only as far as putting it together, but distribution as well. A lot of young broadcasters, they've got their own websites set up, and it's crazy how that whole process has changed over the years. And, Joe, before we dive into some of the highlights, we will have a soccer goal, a walk-off home run. We'll also have a touchdown as well. What are some things that were going through your mind in putting these demo tapes together? Because I think with each sport, it's certainly different. But what were some things that you were going for and trying to accomplish with each sport trying to put this together?
Well, in most instances in my career climbing up the ladder, it was a case of I wanted to do the best possible tape that I could and distribute it as widely as possible, because I had either just been fired, or I knew I was about to be fired, or I had to quit because of the situation. There are a variety of reasons why, but it was always one of those, this had better be done right because it's what may get me my next job, and I am very concerned about getting my next job. And I'm sure anybody listening to this who is in the broadcast biz can relate to what I'm saying.
I think they certainly can. And one of the things I was always taught early on in putting demo tapes together was you've got to make your mark early on, because whoever the decision maker is that's listening, if they've got to listen for more than 30 seconds to get what they're looking to hear, sometimes they're going to dump that tape into a pile, which I'm sure we've all seen said pile at some point if you've been in radio long enough. And
absolutely.
I'm kind of curious as to if that was going through your mind as well, knowing that you really kind of had to make an impact early on.
Yes.
In putting these together.
Yeah, what you just said was imparted to me by general managers and station owners more than once in my career, that you'd better make a big impression right off the bat, because 30 seconds to a minute in, if I haven't heard what I'm looking for, you know, the tape goes in the file cabinet, the one that's on the floor with a circular top. And back in my day, many years ago, if you were a girl trying to get into broadcasting, your dad had better own the radio station if you hope to get a job, because but they just were not hiring women as announcers, not at all. And I heard some really good women when I was at radio stations and listening to tapes along with the owner or the general manager, and I knew better than to say, hey, she sounds pretty good, because I knew what was going on in his mind. Sure enough, as soon as he listened for a little bit, and then boop, right in the old wastebasket, because they weren't hiring women. It was tough for women to get into the biz. Now they have made inroads, and I am sure going to be bigger and better than ever.
No question about that. And it's nice to see a presence of so many females, because there are a lot of really good ones. There's no question about that.
Right.
Let's step aside and take a quick break. We'll hear a quick message from Hometown Dental in Seville. Then we're going to come back and play some of the play-by-play that Joe put on that demo tape back in 1968. It's the Over the Timeline podcast with Joe Tate, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.
Hi, I'm Joe Tate, here to tell you about Hometown Dental in Seville. They're my dentist, and they want to be your dentist for life. Hometown Dental offers same-day and evening hours to fit your schedule. And in emergencies like a broken tooth, they can always fit you in. All PPO insurance is accepted, and new patients are welcome. Call Hometown Dental on Center Street in Seville, or online, visit hometowndentalseville.com. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Welcome back into the Over the Timeline podcast with Joe Tate, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. All right, Joe, we mentioned we're going to play some of these old clips from some of the play-by-play that was on this demo tape. In the late 60s, you really got your feet wet in a number of different sports, many of which showed up on this demo tape. I was able to trim it down to just a few. I've got a touchdown call from an OU Kansas football game. I've got a soccer goal as well to go along with a walk-off home run. Joe, we're going to kick things off with a soccer goal, because you had alluded to this earlier in the podcast that you guys did just about everything, and you also included swimming in that mix. And if I can ever find that swimming tape, we'll definitely have that on this podcast. But soccer is one of those games that can be a little bit difficult, although those who have called soccer have told me, you know, there are some similarities between calling a soccer game and calling a baseball game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, once you understand the basic rules of the game, I didn't find soccer a difficult sport to call at all. In fact, I enjoy soccer. I really do. I think it's an interesting game, and I will find myself sitting and watching TV soccer and really enjoying it.
Well, let's hear a goal from the Joe Tate demo tape from 1968. Here it is.
Now it's broken up by the Bobcats in Ohio. Tries to put a pressure on as they bring it down the side. Here comes Cantu, driving on Baum. Baum got a hand on it. The kick goal. Ohio scores. Cantu put the pressure on. And it was a great bit of work as Stu Hurry finished it off. And the junior from Sarnia, Ontario, got the goal.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an impressive goal call, because I think when you're watching soccer, that's always what you're looking for, right? You're looking for the goal, and sometimes you've just got to be ready for that goal when you're calling the game. But in this particular instance, Joe, you call a goal where it looked like the ball kind of trickled into the net after hitting the goalie's hand.
We were doing that game from the top of Peden Stadium, looking over the back wall down into the practice football field, which also served as the soccer field at Ohio U at the time. So our vantage point was elevated, to say the least. So there were times when you were just hoping that your eyeballs were functioning properly, because it was hard sometimes to see what was going on down there. But I do remember doing not only soccer from up there, Bull, but we also did lacrosse from up there as well.
So you guys were on top of that stadium. That's a beautiful stadium. I believe it overlooks the Hocking River. Is that right?
Yes. But that's not the stadium that was there when I was there. I know the stadium you're talking about. It is a vast improvement over old Peden Stadium. That was just a concrete visage on the plains of the Hocking River.
Well, now suddenly I don't feel so bad about calling a game between Bowling Green and OU back in the early 2000s from a defensive coordinator's office. Things could have been worse. I guess I could have been on top of the roof, right?
There you go. You're right.
Well, speaking of OU football, we have a touchdown call from an OU Kansas football game that showed up on this demo tape. Let's hear that touchdown call.
First and 10 for Ohio. Snyder now, out to the right. Let's check that again. Snyder to the left and Maupin to the right. Signals called from the I formation in the backfield. A setback on the play action. A long pass downfield. Snyder has it, and he's in for a touchdown. Snyder is in for a touchdown. A beautiful pass play. Todd Snyder made a great catch at the 5 and fell into the end zone for a touchdown, and Ohio fights back for 6.
Now, were you calling that game from the top of the roof as well, or were you in the box?
No, we were at Kansas. We were in Lawrence, Kansas. That was Kansas U's Parents' Day. Kansas University, with Pepper Rogers coaching the team, John Zook and that crowd, they had turned the corner from being a real doormat to a team that was on the rise. In fact, the next year, that Kansas ball club went to a bowl game. But they had us for sacrificial lamb on Parents' Day, and Ohio U rose up and smacked them 30-15. It was one of the really great moments that I spent at Ohio University broadcasting that win. And you may have heard the lady in the background screaming and yelling. That was Katie Hess, Bill Hess, the football coach at Ohio U. She sat with me in that game. And every time Ohio U did something really well, she'd haul off and hit me. And by the time the game was over, my shoulder was totally black and blue. She just beat the tar out of my shoulder in her enthusiasm for what her husband's team was doing down on the field.
Well, hopefully the trainer was able to give you some ice or a sling or something like that after the game. But, well, I tell you, Lawrence, Kansas really is in the middle of nowhere, but it is a nice place. And I'm not sure if this was the same stadium that I went to back in the early 2000s. Memorial Stadium, I believe, is what it was called. And, boy, it's such a fascinating campus, isn't it? Because, I mean, I think it's safe to say Kansas is more of a basketball school these days than it is a football school. But that's not to say they still don't love their football in Kansas. Now, if I remember right, they kind of had you guys way, way, way up at the top of that stadium. That's typically where they put the opposition.
That is correct. We were able to see Manhattan, Kansas from there. Yes. And that's where Kansas State was. So, yeah, you kind of got a panoramic view of the University of Kansas football facility from up there.
Which could be tough when you're trying to call a football game. It's difficult if you can't see the numbers in the back of the jersey. And if you're up high enough, you've got to be quick with the binoculars for sure to try and pick out the numbers that you're looking for. So that could be a daunting task, which I think that makes it all the more impressive. You were able to nail that the way you were, and also to nail that goal the way you nailed that as well, because soccer, I think you could probably apply a lot of that same line of thinking.
Pretty much. You're right, Mace.
All right, well, Joe, we've got one more highlight to play here, and this is a baseball game between Western Michigan and OU. Now, you got to call a walk-off, only it was a walk-off for the other team. It was a walk-off for Western Michigan, but let's play that walk-off home run.
6-6 tie. The skies are overcast now at Kalamazoo. As we've been talking to you over the last three innings, clouds have moved in to cover the sky and blot out the sunshine. Kind of a gray day here after a beautiful, sunshiny early afternoon. The pitch, curveball, hit a mile. Back, 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 back. It is gone. A home run to the highway. Western Michigan wins 8-6. He blasted it. It must have gone out at about the 380 mark. And the ball game is over. 8-6, and what can you say?
Wow. I mean, that was I wanted to leave the description in there at the very beginning, because I think that is so important, and sometimes it gets overlooked when a baseball game is called, describing the atmosphere. And really, Joe, a little bit of foreshadowing in there as well, that it was sunny, and then all of a sudden it turned gray for OU, and then it turned dark pretty quickly for the Bobcats at the end.
Cost them the Mid-American Conference Baseball Championship that particular game. Yeah, that was a tough one, and it was a long ride from Kalamazoo back to Athens, Ohio. That was a tough one.
Well, what I find interesting about that particular baseball game is, you know, you're putting the demo tape together, and, you know, it was less than 10 years later, you end up being a part of the Indians broadcast team. And, Joe, I think that just goes to show how quickly things can change in the broadcast business.
Got to be the right guy at the right time and know the right people. That's basically the name of the game. As, you know, I at one point when I was doing the Central Illinois Collegiate Baseball in the summertime, Jim Fanning was a scout for the Montreal Expos. He used to come and sit with me at the ball games because I had updated stats, because I subscribed to the various newspapers that carried the teams of the CCIL. And so he could get updated stats from me at the ball game. And he listened to the play-by-play, liked my work, and he actually recommended to the folks in Montreal that I be considered for the play-by-play job with the brand-new Montreal Expos. The only problem was the Canadians, and I can understand this, they wanted a Canadian to do the play-by-play of the Montreal baseball team. So it was a nice gesture on Jim Fanning's part, but it didn't lead to anything.
I'm glad you brought that up, because relationships with scouts, something that cannot be overlooked. because they can do a lot of help for you in your career. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, scouts, I don't think people often realize this, but today's maybe a little bit different because there's more tools at their disposal. But I think a lot of the old school scouts went about that the exact same way, because there were times where the play-by-play guy had access to things they didn't have access to. And, you know, if it's a scout for a different team, they're coming in trying to get a better feel for what's going on with the team. The play-by-play guy typically is one of the first guys that they go to. And if you meet the right scout, you can go a long ways.
Oh, yeah. And the scouts know who's got the info that they might be interested in. And I happen to have updated stats, and that was very important to a lot of guys. So I got to know a lot of the scouts that cover the CCIL.
Very, very good stuff. Well, Joe, this was a really cool trip down memory lane, and boy, just so fun to listen to the play-by-play from back in the late 60s and some of the stories that went along with some of these games, too. Always a pleasure to sit down and do these podcasts, Joe, and I look forward to doing another one of these again very soon.
Andy, it's always a pleasure. I really enjoy working with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, that's Joe Tate joining us on the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental in Seville. That'll put the wraps on another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast. For Joe Tate, this is Andy Bulbarch saying thank you again for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.